Well, are you kidding? Because I have hope.
Hope.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the assurance that I have a purpose.
A purpose.
Mm-hmm. You can have one too, you know.
Don't want one.
What are you talking about? Everybody wants to have a purpose.
That's not true. Some people want to hold to the unproven fact that we're nothing more than a bunch of protoplasmic goo that evolved over billions of years and will end up as cosmic garbage, therefore serving no one or no purpose at all.
No hope or purpose?
Right.
That's so sad.
Okay, you guys ready for part three? All I got is blue on my screen, Matt, by the way. Part three, we're talking about creation, God's creation. We're talking about God in creation. This week we're going to hit the topic of evolution. The origins of man. Where do we come from? How did we get here? We're going to talk about that. And it's important that we talk about that. It changes our perspective on God, depending on what we believe. It really does. It makes a huge effect on how we act, what we do, what we believe in, and honestly, will we have hope? Do we have hope in this world? And hope comes from God. I hope you realize that. Hope comes from God. And we're going to continue on with this topic, finding God in creation. We're going to talk a lot about evolution today. We're going to talk about science. I love science. I'm an engineer by choice. I'm an engineer, and that's what I have my degree in, is engineering. Doesn't make me an expert in this field, but I enjoy it, for sure. We're going to talk about the Big Bang Theory tonight. Where did evolution come from? Variations, mutations, and we're going to talk about ape men. How will that be? Will that be good? First, I want to... do we have even PowerPoint here? Okay, I think I just went ahead three slides. I want to proper recognition where it comes from. Kent Hovind, Dr. Kent Hovind, his website is www.drdino.com or I think it's com. Anyway, his stuff is all uncopyrighted. He encourages people to use it, so I've taken full advantage of that and used a lot of his slides in this stuff, so I want to make sure that he got credit for that. Actually, he has an ongoing outstanding bet. Dr. Hovind has an outstanding bet, $250,000 to anybody that can give him one proof of evolution. He's had that going for years, a decade. No one has been able to bring him anything. One proof of macroevolution, not variations within kinds like Darwin's study, and we'll talk about tonight, but real evolution, the kind of evolution from one species to another, $250,000 if anybody can bring him one bit of evidence that evolution ever took place. And no one's been able to do it yet. I think that's kind of interesting. We're going to move on here, and I'm going to do it without these slides, I think. Do you guys have anything up here for... Oh, okay. There we go. In the beginning, God created. We believe that. I believe that. I hope you do too. That in the beginning, God created. He didn't have to have it evolve. You can believe that if you want to, but in the beginning, God created. We believe that, and it strengthens our faith. How big is your God? We talked about that a little bit last week. You know... It matters to us. We've been told, haven't we? We've been told for years that the earth is billions of years old. And 18 to 20 billion years ago, all the matter in the universe was concentrated in a very, very hot region that may have been much smaller than the period on this page, we've been told. This is a textbook, a high school science textbook. And then the region exploded, and that was called the Big Bang. That's what we've been told. We've been told this about 30 million years ago. Large primates such as monkeys and apes evolved. The earliest fossil, apes, may be ancestral to both humans and modern apes, date from about 15 to 20 million years ago. This is what we've been told. This is what we've been told in our science textbooks. How many of you have been told that in your science textbooks in school? Everybody has been, unless you skip science, you have been told this, okay? And actually, at Jordan, in the Jordan School District, they will not allow you to teach anything else. They handed out and they will not allow students to even talk about anything else. They're handed a six-page, single-spaced paper that says evolution is a fact. Don't even think about mentioning anything about intelligent design or special creation, because we know evolution is a fact. It was handed out to our school district, at least in one biology class, this semester. Is that true? Is it true? Well, we're gonna look at it. Some people believe it is, and we give respect to that. And we believe that you have a right to believe what you want. But the Bible says one man seems right until another comes forward and questions him. And I believe that too. That one person will always seem right if he's the only one talking. You believe that?
Yeah.
We're gonna hear a different side, and I think that side is gonna strengthen your faith. And you may go, wow, I just have a hard time believing that. Well, you should. You've only heard one side of the story until tonight. We've heard this, that we've all evolved from this ancestral evolutionary tree, right? We've all heard that, from amoebas all the way up to elephants, to humans, to apes, to fish. Everything comes out of the same tree. We've been told this. We know that the chain that goes from monkeys, we've seen that over and over, from monkeys to primates to Neanderthal man to us. And we've seen that chart. And we've been told that this is indeed a fact. We've been told this by people like Cornelia Dean. She said that there is no credible scientific challenge to the idea that all living things evolved from common ancestors, that evolution on Earth has been going on for billions of years, and that evolution can be and has been tested and confirmed by the methods of science. We're going to look at science tonight. I love science. We are not against science. We're against bad science, though.
Amen.
We're for good science. We want good. Don't we want our kids being taught good science in the textbooks? We do. And as Christians, we should desire and be willing to debate in good science principles with practices of good science. We've been told this by people like Richard Dawkins. He's an outspoken evolutionist. He said this: it is absolutely safe to say that if you meet somebody who claims not to believe in evolution, that person is ignorant, stupid, or insane, or wicked. But I'd rather not consider that. So this is what we're up against in the academic world. That if anyone doesn't believe in evolution, you are either ignorant, stupid, insane, or possibly wicked. I think he would think I'm wicked. I think I would fall into that category. Because I believe vehemently that there's another solution. There's another scientific challenge to his theory of evolution. The idea that it's been tested and proven, well, let's take a look at that. One man seems right until another steps forward. The whole idea of where we come from answers these four great questions. Every single religion, and I think science in many ways, tries to answer these four questions. Who am I? And what am I worth? Where did I come from? Why am I here? And where am I going when I die? Carl Sagan, that's what he was looking for. All his science was trying to figure out what he was here for. This is what we try to figure out with science and with religion. The Bible says that we were created in God's image. It says, then God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness. Says in Genesis 1:26, and then Genesis 1:27 says this. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. We believe this is true. God created men. God created women. God created everything. He made it all. He can do that. That's a big God. And we believe our God is big. And he's able to do that. We believe that. That's a faith issue, and I realize that. I believe God created everything. He made it all. He didn't just set it in motion to some evolutionary process. He made it. Boom, there it is. He created a man. He created a woman. There was no man, no woman. He created them. There was no stars, no sun, no earth. He created it all. No animals. Boom, he created it. And I think there are really only two solutions to this question of where do we come from. There's only two possibilities. Number one, either someone made the world, or number two, the world made itself. Those are the only two logical possibilities. Either somebody made it, or it is self-created. It is created by itself through natural processes. No outside intervention. No God. No divine intervention. It just simply made itself. Those are the two choices. I happen to believe number one. I'm not ashamed of that. And again, I'm an engineer by by degree, I guess, is what it would be. And I'm not ashamed to say I believe God created it all. Why? Because I believe the Bible. And I see evidence. It's not just blind faith. I see evidence. I don't think the other side has compelled me or should compel you to believe what they say. Here's what one evolutionist said, Sir Arthur Keith, in his Evolution and Ethics. He wrote the foreword to the reprinting of Darwin's book, The Origin of Species, the reprint, a 100-year reprint. He said this in the foreword: the law of Christ is incompatible with the law of evolution. An evolutionist said this. Nay, the two laws are at war with each other. And I say, I think they are. Don't you sense that too? I mean, the other side has a bigger megaphone for sure. But our voice is getting louder, and they don't like it. But the two theories, either the world was created or was self-created, they're at war with each other, as they should be. Because it takes away God's glory when we say, oh, it just came about through natural, by on its own, without any intervention. Because our God says, I made it all. You're stealing my glory. He made it. And the two were at odds. Here's what we're going to look at today. Let's talk about these things. What makes good and bad science? First of all, we'll look at that. Is the Big Bang theory correct? Does it have science? Have they tested it? Is it proven? Where did the theory of evolution come from? We're going to talk about this theory of evolution. Do variations and mutations prove evolution? You may have heard that. Mutations and variations, that's what gives us a better species. What about transitional ape man? What about the missing links? We're going to talk about all those things. First of all, let's talk about science. What makes good and bad science? I've got a definition for you from the Webster's Dictionary. Science: knowledge derived from observation, study, and testing of evidence. That's a basic definition of science. We can observe it, we can study it, we can test it. And a lot of times we should be able to reproduce what we've observed and tested. That's good science. And we believe in good science. We do. We believe in laws like this. We believe in good science like this. The first law of thermodynamics says that matter or energy can neither be created nor destroyed. I've taken classes on thermodynamics, whole semesters on thermodynamics in my field. And you know what? This is a law. This isn't a suggestion. This isn't a postulate. This isn't a theory. This always proves true. This is a law, just like the law of gravity. This is a law. Energy or matter can neither be destroyed or created. It's a law. It's a science. This is good science, okay? This is not a suggestion. Same as the second law of thermodynamics, that everything tends toward disorder or entropy. Everything starts from an ordered state and tends toward, just left alone, will tend toward disorder. That's the second law of thermodynamics. Just look at my kid's room and you will see that this is true. Go in it. I make sure they clean it up. That at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day, it's the second law has come into their room once again. Everything is disarrayed. Everything is in disorder. Look at my roof. My shingles, they were put on brand new. You know, they are tending toward disorder, toward entropy. They are breaking down. Just leave things alone. Leave a building alone in a city and don't do anything to it and look at it about 50 years later. Will it get better? Will the paint be newer? No, it'll tend toward entropy. That's the second law of thermodynamics. Everything starts from a state of order, will tend toward a state of disorder. Now, that flies right in the face of evolution, by the way. That everything's getting better and better and better. It contradicts a law of science right out of the chute. That everything, both of them do. The first one is that energy cannot be created or destroyed. Energy or matter. That's the Big Bang. Everything just came from nowhere. It was created. Well, that breaks the first law of thermodynamics. The fact that evolution says everything's getting better breaks the second law. There's other laws, the law of biogenesis, that life only comes from living matter. Life can only come from living matter. These are scientific laws. Again, not theories, they're not anything like the theory of evolution, which some people think it's a law. It's not a law, it's a theory of evolution. It's a suggestion. It's one idea that people have accepted. These are laws that life can only come from living things. It's a law of science. That's good science. We like good science around here. So we ask this question. But doesn't everybody believe in evolution? I mean, my goodness, Bill, why are you even talking about this? I mean, we all know that come on, let's just be honest. Everybody believes in evolution because it's proven. Does everybody believe in evolution? I don't think so. Now, this study was done in 1991, but I think the numbers are even bigger now that when you ask Americans, they would say that God created the earth in less than 10,000 years, almost half. Say, yeah, I believe that. If you ask Americans, almost half Americans say, I believe that God created the earth in less than 10,000 years. Do you believe in the pure evolution theory? Less than 10% would say, yes, I believe in that. Did you know that? That's Americans. It's even higher now. More than half believe that God created the earth in less than 10,000 years. You know, we shouldn't believe in that because that's not what we've been taught. We look at the scientists, on the other hand. 55% of United States natural scientists believe in Darwinian evolution. They kind of broke the curve there. Only 10% of Americans do, but 55% of the scientists, for some reason, believe in this theory. That's why we're being taught this theory, even though we don't believe it. Most of us don't believe it. Let me just share with you just some scientific things, okay? Just an example of how science can be wrong. For 1,500 years, scientists believed that planets revolved around the Earth. This is what was taught as good science, that all the planets revolved around the Earth and that the moon revolved around the Earth. They couldn't quite figure that out. When they finally started figuring out that we were going around the sun, they had a hard time with the moon going around the Earth. Anyway, the fact is, do we go around the sun or does the sun go around us? Okay, we know for a fact that truly the answer is that we go around the sun. We orbit around the sun. But for 1,500 years, it was taught as scientific fact, 1,500 years, that everything revolves around the earth, right? You've heard that before. How about this? For 2,000 years, it was taught that heavier objects fall faster than lighter objects until Galileo proved them wrong in a vacuum, that all objects fall at the same speed in a vacuum. We know that's science. But for 2,000 years, the true scientific community was teaching that heavier objects fall faster. Why? Because it just seemed logical. But you put them in a vacuum, and they all fall the same speed. That was science. In 1799, George Washington was bled twice by his doctors before he died. They believed in the doctrine of humors. They would bleed people. They thought if you were sick, you had to get rid of you had bad blood. And so they drained them. They would cut them open and they would drain them. George Washington died because of these bleedings. He might still be alive today if he wasn't bled. You know, sometimes smart people can be dead wrong. Sometimes smart people can be dead wrong. And I don't blame them, but let's just be honest. We like good science. If we know something's not true, let's not say it is. Okay? And if we're not sure, let's just admit that. I think this is interesting. In 2004, this was a big deal. I remember hearing about this and reading about this. Anthony Flew, who was an outspoken, amazingly outspoken atheist, evolutionist of our time, a contemporary of you and I. And all of a sudden, he came out going, you know what? It's a bunch of baloney. I can no longer believe in Darwinian evolution. This is in 2004, just a couple years ago. And it shook the scientific community because this guy was a scientist and well-known and outspoken atheist evolution. At age 81, after decades of being an atheist, he concluded there must be an intelligent designer. He concluded that from all his evidence and research. He now doubts that Darwin can explain our origins. To me, that's unbelievable. I believe that well-meaning scientists can make good observations and come up with wrong conclusions. Good well-meaning people can come up with good observations and have wrong conclusions. I think that's happened. I think it's happened. I think it's happened with this particular issue, the Big Bang. Is the Big Bang theory correct? Well, let me just share with you what I believe. I believe that about 6,000 years ago, this is my theory, from the Bible, about 6,000 years ago, God created the heavens and the earth. About 6,000 years ago, not billions, but about 6,000 years ago, according to the Bible. And about 4,400 years ago, there was a flood, a worldwide flood that destroyed everything. And this world started over with 8 people on a boat. I'm going to talk about that in week 5, 4,400 years ago. That's what the Bible would claim. if you just take it for its direct reading, which I think there's no other reason to not take it for its direct reading. There's no reason to take it as poetry, no reason to interject millions of years. You just read it, it gives you clear genealogies, and it comes up to about 6,000 years that the earth has been here. Now, is the Big Bang Theory true? This is what evolutionists will tell us. That the Big Bang took place about 20 billion years ago. That's what we're told. That's a long, long time ago, 20 billion years ago, that the Big Bang took place. This is what we're told. Here it is again in the textbook. The birth and death of the universe. I'll read it again. How was the universe born and how will it end? From a high school science book. Most astronomers believe that about 18 to 20 million years ago, all the matter in the universe was concentrated into one very dense, very hot region that may have been much smaller than the period on this page. Now just stop for a second and think with me about this. Just track with me for a second. Because last week I showed you some pictures of some pretty big stars. Remember that? I showed you the sun and how big it was compared to the earth. Then I showed you another star that could hold about 34 million of our suns. And I showed you another star that could hold, 100 million of those particular stars. That's a lot of matter. All the matter in the universe was squeezed into a little dot no bigger than the dot on this page. This is the theory. It's not a fact. Nobody was there. But this is the theory. And then an explosion happened, and they call that the Big Bang about 20 million years ago. This is what we're taught. It's been estimated that there are enough stars for every person on the earth to own 2 trillion stars. Every one of you could have 2 trillion stars. You could have your own stars. 2 trillion of them. Every human on earth. Think about that. Think about the amount of mass and matter. That's the known universe. Okay, then take all of those trillions and billions of stars and squeeze them down into a dot this big. Okay, just... That's a crowded dot right there. That's what that is. Okay, this is the theory. This is what we're taught. This is the Big Bang Theory. Okay? And in the Humanist Manifesto, one of the first tenets, well, it is the first tenet of the Humanist Manifesto. If you want to sign up to be a humanist and you want to sign off on the Humanist Manifesto, you have to agree that humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created. So remember the two choices I said? It's either created or it's self-created. They understand this very well. Humanists understand it. And they say very clearly, it is not created, it is self-created. And if you want to be a humanist in our club, then you better sign off on this. I think it's just kind of interesting to even break down the word universe. You realize that the word universe comes from uni, which means single, and verse, which means spoken sentence. Universe, a single spoken sentence, is where we get our universe. I think that's kind of interesting. We've been told things like this, that the matter and all the matter and the energy in our universe, they come closer and closer to the central area. It says all the matter and all the energy will once again be packed into a small area. This is going to happen again, according to science books. This area may be, again, no bigger than the period at the end of this page, at the end of the sentence. Then another Big Bang will occur about every 80 to 100 billion years. This happens. Okay? So we're told in our science books. That you pay for. The Origins of the Universe, another science book, 1989 science book, says this. Let me just read the top part. If the universe is expanding, then it must have once been smaller. Now that's good science because I agree with that. Okay, that makes sense. If it's expanding, it must have been smaller. If you could run the life of the universe in reverse like a film, you would see the universe contracting until it disappeared in a flash of light, leaving nothing. Okay, so they're saying if you go back, there was nothing. In the realm of the universe, nothing really means nothing. Wow. Yeah, okay, just maybe I should read that again. I'll read it slower. Nothing really means nothing. It's a science book. Not only matter and energy would disappear, but also space and time would disappear. So there's really nothing. However, physicists theorize that, now listen, from this state of nothingness, we agree there's no matter, no energy, no time, no space, no anything. But from this state of nothingness, the universe began in a gigantic explosion about 16.5 billion years ago. And I just have to stop, and they say, and it's called the Big Bang Theory. And I have to stop and I go, what exploded? honestly, just stop and just think for a second. What exploded? And who bought the gas to make it explode? There was nothing, and then it exploded. This is what we're taught, not just here. Here, look at this in Discover Magazine, Scientific Journal. Where did everything come from? Good question. That little phrase right there says the universe at about 10 to the minus 35 seconds was this size. The size of the dot on that page. That's what the journal says. How can that be? Let's read what it says. It says the universe burst into something from absolutely nothing. Why don't you say that with me? When I say nothing, you say nothing, okay? The universe burst into something from absolutely nothing. Zero. Nada. And as it got bigger, what got bigger? Nothing got bigger. It, what? Nothing became filled with even more stuff that came from absolutely nowhere. How is that possible? Good question! Why don't more people ask that question? If this is a theory, let's ask questions. Well, ask Alan Guth. His theory on his theory of inflation helps explain everything. Okay, let's ask Alan. We've got a we know what Alan wrote. Alan wrote this, Dr. Guth, in the May 1984 edition. He wrote this: the observable universe could have evolved from an infinitesimal region, small as a dot. It's tempting to go one step further and speculate that the entire universe evolved from literally nothing, says Alan Guth, a purported expert on the Big Bang. Scientists. Everything came from nothing. This is what we're told. We come from nothing. And, you know, you could argue with me, and people have, and we've had conversations, and you may talk with people or scientists that say, you know, I believe in the Big Bang, and you say, well, let's talk about that. And you say, and you let them talk, and this is what they'll tell you, that about 20 billion years ago, the universe from nothing condensed into a little, all the matter in the universe condensed into a little dot, and it began spinning, and it began to flatten out, and then it exploded. Okay, they will tell you that. And good question for you would be, where did all the matter come from? Where did it come from? And you know what he's going to say? We don't know. Which is an honest answer. They don't know. And then you'll say, you know, I've got a different theory. I've got a Big Bang theory, but it's different than yours, and I'll tell you about it in a second. But I believe that God created, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And he's going to go, oh, wait a minute. Well, how do you know God exists? You can't prove that. And I'll go, well, you know what? You're right. I can't prove that scientifically. But what it does is it puts us at a standstill. We have two choices, I believe. First choice is that in the beginning God, or in the beginning dirt. And both are religious views that require faith, don't they? Don't they? If you believe in the Big Bang, you don't know where your matter came from. You have to take it by faith that somehow it is self-created, that it came about by itself. And that takes faith, my friend, because you weren't there and you don't know. And you say, well, you're just religious guys. You just believe in God. You don't know where he came from. I say, you're right. But I have faith that in the beginning, God created. You have a faith. I have a faith. Why is your religion paid for and being taught in the public schools? And mine, they don't even allow me to talk about it. Yours is faith just like mine. It's a religious belief. It's not science. Science is observable. And you can recreate it. And you can test it. They have a theory that they have said is a law. And have said nothing else could be taught because we know it's true. We're not against science. We like good science, okay? Let's continue on. Big Bang. It says that the condensed dot, the really packed dot, begins to spin faster and faster. So the nebula begins to rotate in this process of the Big Bang. Our textbooks tell us that it began to spin faster and faster and faster, and stars began to kind of plunge out of there, and our sun was born out of that. And then all of a sudden, bang, everything was created. This is what we're told. Everything is shot out, right? I'm not lying to you. This is what you're taught. That everything came out of that. All the universes were born. Everything exploded and it all came about. All the matter went all over the universe. Galaxies were born. Stars were born. The Earth was born. Every bit of matter that we have came out of that little dot as it spun faster and faster and faster. That's what we're told. Here's what it says in a textbook. It says the tiny speck began to expand. The space energy speck, now the size of a baseball, began cooling off, and matter began to condense from energy. And by 3 minutes, I don't know where they got that, but atomic nuclei appeared at 3 minutes. Okay. I won't go off on that like I could, okay? But remember, we're talking about science. And people say, I had somebody say, I'm not going to come to your teaching because I don't want to hear a pastor talk about science. Well, I'm talking about science here, and here's what I know about science, is that science is knowledge derived from observation, study, and testing of evidence. I haven't seen any science yet with a Big Bang theory, okay? I haven't seen any. They don't know. It's a theory. I have these questions about the Big Bang theory. Where did the matter come from, number one? Where did the energy come from to run this machine? Where did the laws come from? Where did the law of gravity? Where did the first law of thermodynamics? Where did the second law? Where did the law of biogenesis? Where do those laws come from anyway? Are they just self-created? Why are they always laws? Why is there never an exception to those laws? Why is that? If everything is random, why do we have laws at all? It almost points to a designer, doesn't it? Well, that's faith. Well, so is yours. They're both faith. And I admit that. I'm willing to admit it. Are you? Now, I want you to think just for a little bit. We're going to have a few more questions. Remember the dot. Think about the dot spinning faster, faster. All the matter in the universe crunching to dot, spinning faster, faster, getting faster, faster. More energy. Somehow it's getting energy from somewhere, and the matter came from somewhere. We don't know where. And boom, it explodes. Okay, I want you to think of a merry-go-round, okay? Just to give you an illustration here. A merry-go-round that's going clockwise, okay? If you got a watch, if it's not digital, you know what I'm talking about, okay? Clockwise on the watch. So you get a bunch of fourth graders on the merry-go-round, and you start pushing them around really fast, okay? I'm going to give you a little science lesson here. Okay, so you start pushing them around. At first, there's phase one. They kind of enjoy. They're kind of giggling, saying, come on, come on, can't you go faster? Faster! Okay, you go to phase two, and you get up to about 30 miles an hour. And that thing is spinning, and they're quieting down, and they're kind of holding on for dear life because they're going, slow down a little bit. You go, no, we're going to go faster. And so you go faster and faster. That's phase three, is they're saying, slow down. You go, no, we're going to go to phase four. So once you get up to phase four, all of a sudden something happens. Fourth graders go flying, okay? And you get up to about 60 miles an hour. They are flying, okay? And unless they encounter resistance like a tree, they will continue to fly. And here's something kind of interesting. Now listen, here's the science lesson. It's a science lesson on the conservation of angular momentum. It's a true science principle. It's a law that if you have a spinning object in a vacuum that has no resistance, there's no resistance, and that's what you'd have in the Big Bang, right? Because all the matter is in one dot. And if this is spinning, there's no resistance, is there? When things go busting out, there's nothing they're going to hit. The law of conservation of angular momentum says that if you have a spinning object and particles fly off from that object, those objects that flew off will spin in the same direction. Okay, that's the conservation of angular momentum. We know that's true. So, if this theory of the Big Bang is true and this dot spinning and everything, boom, goes out, what would you expect the direction of everything to be spinning? In the same direction. Well, isn't it interesting that even in our own solar system, Uranus is spinning sideways and backwards from all the other planets. Not only that, we have two other. We have Venus and Pluto that are also spinning backwards from all the other planets just in our solar system. How could that be? There are 8 of the 91 moons in our solar system are rotating backwards. Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune have moons orbiting in both directions. We know that there are whole galaxies that are spinning a different direction, opposite of all the other galaxies. Now, wait a minute. I thought this was a fact that had been proven. This makes me wonder. Maybe it didn't happen that way. And, you know, if I asked a scientist that, why are these things spinning the wrong way? You know what they'd say? I don't know. And you know what I would say? I think God did it just to mess with your head. Something's not right. Not only that, but if everything was shot off like we're told it is, spin out, everything should be distributed evenly. We find the scientists actually have a term, they call it lumpy. The universe is lumpy. It's not distributed evenly. There are huge pockets and clusters of and great voids all over the place. It should be an even distribution. There's nothing, there's no friction, there's nothing to hit. The Big Bang Theory is just that. It's a theory. Dr. Frederick Hoyle, who is an astronomer and also a mathematician, he said this, "I have little hesitation," listen to this, and he's an evolutionist, "in saying that a sickly pall now hangs over the Big Bang Theory," meaning it's very doubtful that it's true, says Frederick Hoyle. And I think there's other scientists like Anthony Flew who are saying, you know, I don't think so. I think there had to be an intelligent designer. Scientists more and more are coming around to believe that. So that's the Big Bang. Let's go on to theory of evolution. Well, here's the other option. Yeah, let me look at this real quick. 2 Peter 3:5 says, "But they deliberately forgot," who? Those that are perishing. Deliberately forgot something. What? "That long ago, by God's word, the heavens existed and the earth was formed out of water and water." People will deliberately forget this. They don't want to believe it. Some people don't want to. They will deliberately choose not to believe that with a word God spoke the universe into existence. They will deliberately. It says they're perishing. And they'll perish. Here's a different Big Bang. Hey, God spoke and bang, it was created. That's my Big Bang. I believe it's true. All right, let's look at evolution for a second. This is kind of interesting. Where did the theory of evolution come? Let's do a little background here. The theory of evolution says this. Basically that groups of organisms change with passage of time, mainly as a result of natural selection, so that descendants differ morphologically and physiologically from their ancestors. And that's what evolution would say. And this is what we're taught as fact. Where did it come from? Well, it came from a young man named Charles Darwin in his book, The Origins of Species. By means of natural selection, he wrote a book. He went to an island and he studied the beaks of finches, and he saw that there was lots of variations, and certainly there were as he studied these variations. Here's one thing maybe you didn't know about Charles Darwin in 1859 is when he wrote his book. Here's something you may not have known. It's kind of interesting. Quote says this, "It would surprise many to know that Charles Darwin, the founder of modern evolutionary theory, was not a scientist, but a theologian. Darwin only had a divinity degree from Christ College, Cambridge, and no formal training in science whatsoever." I have more science training than Charles Darwin. And I have less seminary degree than he does, too, by the way. It's kind of interesting. I thought that was kind of interesting. He'd been studying at a divinity school to be a theologian. And he went into this field and came up with his theories on natural selection, the origins of species. Here's some of the things that he said in his book. He said this, Charles Darwin, "Natural selection acts only," now listen closely, "acts only by taking advantage of slight successive variations." You know what I'm talking about. That's natural selection. This is Charles Darwin's theory. These are his words. "Natural selection acts only by taking advantage of slight successive variations." Goes on to say, "She can never, natural selection, can never take a great and sudden leap, but must advance by short and sure, though slow, steps." So Charles Darwin was saying this. Evolution takes a long time if it's going to happen. He saw it in the variation of the finches. He saw that over time, and a relatively short time, these birds' beaks would change. If there was a drought on the Galapagos Island, the beaks would get stronger and stubbier over a few generations so they could break through seeds better and get moisture. We see that even today. We study that. We call that variations within a species. We all agree that is not macroevolution. That's microevolution or that's just variations within a kind. No one argues about that. Charles Darwin was simply saying, by observing these beaks, I'm saying that maybe he made the leap that maybe this is the way we evolve. Maybe if that beak changes, maybe in a bigger sense, this is the way evolution takes place. But it must take place by short and successive steps, not large steps. It can't be large steps, says Charles Darwin. Okay, are you set with me on that? I just want to make sure we're all clear. This is what Charlie was saying. But evolution, and we know that on the Galapagos Islands, he studied 14 varieties of finches, and we see the different finch beak sizes. Okay, so he did some good science, and what he really saw was variation within the finch species, just variation like we'll see all the time. He did not see macroevolution, but his theory was if you see it within a kind, maybe it happens out. Maybe it happens from species to species. And that's a big jump. But what he said was he was a good scientist. He said, but it must take place over short successive steps. It can never go boom, way from one species to another. You should be able to see it in the fossil record, in other words. He believed it, though. He believed this treat. He believed that it was a wonderful thing. He said it this way. It is a truly wonderful fact that all animals and all plants throughout all time and space should be related to each other. He began to believe it. All he saw was one small example within one variety of bird. And he extrapolated out, and the world has bit into it and said, yes, it must be true. It must be a fact. But even Charles Darwin said, we must see it over time, slow variations over time. Evolution is defined in the textbooks as taking millions of years and speaks of this primordial soup that is evidently on the planet for millions and millions of years. Again, this hasn't been proved. It's been tried to be proved in test tubes, and it has been disastrous. They've not been able to do it to create enzymes or anything that would have any effect on creating life. Even when humans intercede and try to make it happen, like an intelligent designer trying, it's really hard to do and they can't do it. But we're told that we are come from this primordial soup that over millions of years we come out of. The first self-replicating system must have emerged, according to our textbooks, from this organic soup. This is where we come from, the primordial soup. Now listen to me. Evolution has several meanings, and this is where we get tripped up. This is where you can get tripped up. Somebody says, you don't believe in evolution? We see it all the time. It's been proved. Well, what are you talking about? What kind of evolution? I'm going to give you four definitions. There's really about seven, but these are the four that we mainly talk about. There's cosmic evolution, or the origins of life, of time, space, and matter. We're told that the origins of life, cosmic evolution, comes from the Big Bang, from the evolutionists. We say it comes from God. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's cosmic evolution. There's organic evolution, or the origins of life. Okay? That's a different kind of evolution. There's macroevolution, origin of major kinds. Where do all the different kinds of animals come from and humans? Where does all that come from? That's another definition of evolution. But there's a fourth that is true science. All these other ones are simply speculation. They're religions. Nobody has any proof of any of those. They have their theory. We have ours. Okay, are you following me there? Those three we don't know about. But this one we do, this microevolution or variations and adaptions within the same kind of plant or animal. We see variations. Kinds are a species, meaning dog, we have the dog species, we have the cat species, we have the cow species, we have the human species. We have certain genuses of flowers. It's the same species. We have the whale species. We have the squirrel species. We have lots of different species. Microevolution says that within that gene pool of that species, there can be tons of variation. Just look around you. Look at the person sitting next to you. There's amazing variation within a kind, a humankind. We're not all exactly the same. That's called microevolution. It'd be better to call it variations within the kind. We know that happens. That's good science. You know, there's people making genetic corn that is just doing that. They're changing within the genetic code. They're changing that species to make it stronger. They're not making corn turn into wheat. They can't do that. But they can sure make the wheat, the corn stronger, and they can change it within the boundaries that it seems like God has put on species or kinds. Are you following me there? Okay, a fish cannot mate with an elephant and get anything, okay? It will not happen. It doesn't happen. That's because there's a genetic boundary. There's a genetic boundary on the kinds, on the species, okay? But within that species, yeah, lots of variation. That's what Darwin saw with the finches. The question is, can we go from one species, from a fish, to a cow? Can we do that? Well, there should be evidence. Darwin said there should be successive small variation, just small, 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 for over a long period of time. We should see evidence of that. Question is, do we? Again, Darwin only counted 14 varieties of finches, okay? And it was a kind. It was a one kind. It was a finch. It was a bird. What Darwin had observed was not, it was not macroevolution, it was microevolution or variations within a kind. That's what he saw. Just like with dogs or flowers, we see variations within the kind, okay? And this is important for you to understand. Darwin said this, if it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down. And I don't have a quote with him, but he also said, if you don't find in the fossil record these variations, slight variations, all the different, the transitional fossils, all the way up to what you have today, if you don't see that, then my theory is absolutely breaks down. He said that. Charles Darwin said that. You know, we have less transitional fossils today than we did when Charles Darwin said that. How could that be? It's because a lot of them that we thought were transitional have been proven to be false or hoaxes. We have less proof today than we did when Charlie Darwin said we better find a bunch of transitional fossils, otherwise this theory is shot. We have less today than we did then, which is amazing to me. But he's saying here, if you got any organism that could not have possibly come about through small successive changes, then my theory breaks down. Well, do we have that? I think so. Michael Behe, a scientist who is not a believer, but he definitely believes in intelligent design. He is a biochemist. He has come up with a book called Darwin's Black Box, and he talks about this idea of irreducible complexity. I won't go into it. There's a little bacteria, a tiny little single-celled organism that, until we got high-powered microscopes, just looked like a little blob of protoplasm. We'd look at it, and we'd kind of swim around in a petri glass, and we'd kind of go, oh, that's kind of cute. A little single-cell thing. It's called a bacterial flagellum. We probably study this, according to Michael Behe, more than any other little single-celled organism. We know more about this little guy than about anything else. We've studied this and studied this. What have we found out about this? One of the simplest little organisms that we have. I mean, if that thing couldn't have evolved, I don't know what could have. Most of us think that we came from a little cell like that. Well, how simple is it? Charlie said that if you couldn't get something... From successive small changes, if it's too complex, then my theory goes down the drain. Well, what about this most simple little bacteria? Let's look inside this bacteria. Do you realize this bacteria has a motor and a rotor and an engine, and that thing can stop? It goes about 15,000 RPMs a second and can stop in reverse. It's got about 14 parts that have to come together like a mousetrap. All the parts are important on a little mousetrap, right? Take away the wood and it doesn't work. Take away the trigger and it doesn't work. Same thing with this simple little cell. If you take away the tail, it's dead in the water. If you take away the motor, it's dead in the water. If you take away the little rotor, it's dead in the water. And again, there's about 14 of these parts. They're little, they are little parts, and they've actually got all the DNA strands and all the stuff going on inside this cell. It's amazing how complicated this is. Now, Michael Behe and other biotech scientists are scratching their heads and going, what are the odds of all these pieces just kind of falling together over millions of years? How could it happen? Because they're independent of any other organism. That tail, you know, you don't see that anywhere else. So, you know, that had to develop for a purpose. And if it was just a tail laying in the primordial goo, it wouldn't do any good. It would just sit there and it would be taken out by natural selection because it's no good. So all these things had to come together at the same time. Otherwise, it would be selected out. To make a long story short, I can give you a video on this. He's saying it's impossible. It's scientifically and statistically impossible for even this little tiny cell to have just happened on its own through successive variations. It all had to come together or it would have stopped dead in the tracks. Just like a mousetrap with all the parts. The parts don't do any good until you put them all together at the same time. Leave one out, it's dead. If anything's dead for millions of years, it's naturally selected out, is it not? According to evolution theory. So the smallest little tiny cell blows Darwin's theory. That's why he wrote the book, Darwin's Black Box. Michael Behe summarizes, he says this, You look at the incredible complexity of life and the inevitability, the question arises, what brought all of this into existence? That's where it brought him. That's where it brought Anthony Flew. That's where it's bringing lots and thousands of scientists are going, man, look at the complexity, even in these little cells. Where did it come from? It must have been an intelligent designer. It's impossible for it to evolve over time. That's what scientists are starting to say. Now, we see the variety within the kinds. We do. We see it. You look at a chart of dogs, and I'll show you in a second, and you'll see it. And the Bible says this. The fruit tree yielding fruit after its kind. The living creature after its kind within the species, the genetic species. We see the variation of dogs. You know, you see lots of different dogs, lots of different kinds. They probably all came from one a wolf or another dog. They all came from the same thing. We know it's one species, even though there's a lot of variety. I mean, you got big dogs and you got little dogs. They're dogs. They're not anything but a dog. And there's variety within the species. Are you following me there? We believe that. Charles Darwin saw it, and he extrapolated and said, well, maybe that's the way we became who we are. But he said it has to happen over a long period of time. We don't see the evidence. Okay, we don't see it. Even Mary Leakey, who discovered some pretty important skull fragments, she said this, all of those trees of life with their branches of our ancestors, that's just a bunch of nonsense, she thinks. She's an evolutionist. She has found some pretty significant finds, according to evolutionists. Now, real quick, let's talk about mutations. Because if you're thinking, well, it's through mutations that these things take place. That over time, a mutation will happen and it'll select out the bad and keep the strong. Here's the deal about mutations, real quick. Mutations, in this evolutionary chain, mutations are weeded out by natural selection. Rare mutations are almost always weeded out anyway. Mutation is not a good thing, in other words. Mutations are a mix-up or loss of already existing genetic data. It's nothing new is added. Mutations are not being added to, they're being taken away from stuff that already existed. And they're anti-evolution. According to Pierre-Paul Crass, he said this, mutations do not produce any kind of evolution. And he's a scientist. Mutations don't create any kind of evolution. Natural selection, said Charles Darwin, is scrutinizing the slightest variations, rejecting those that are bad, preserving and adding up all the good. So according to the natural selection theory, all the bad will be discarded over time and only the good will be kept. The battle of the fittest. Mutation expert, Nobel Prize winner H. Mueller stated, talking about mutations, he said, good ones are so rare that we consider all of them bad. A mutation is always considered a bad thing in the scientific world. It's never considered a good thing. Mutations are not good. So to say that, you know, we evolved through mutations, that better things came out of this, it just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. All right. This is my last topic. Bear with me here. What about the transitional ape man? What about transitions? If evolution really happened, there should be transitions. We should see transitions. We should see evidence of transition. We should see fossils. If man started as an ape and worked his way up, then we should see fossils. Okay, we should actually see what we should see is transitional forms even today. Why don't we? Why don't we see half ape, half man? Where are the living transitions? We don't see them. All we see are monkeys and humans. We don't see anything in between. Why do we still have monkeys? Why didn't they all transition into men? And then why don't we have the in-between stuff? We should have millions, okay? Here's what we've been told is true. Constantly, we're hearing of new fossil finds, and they're heralded as what? The missing link. Why do we call it the missing link? Because it's missing. They don't have one. If they had it, it wouldn't be missing. That's why their hope is every time something comes up, we found the what? The missing link. Meaning they admit in that statement that something's missing in the fossil record. If we just had enough time, we'd find it. That's what Charlie Darwin thought. And now we have less fossils than we did back then that prove anything close to transitionary or from one species to another. We have way less than we did back then. We're told this. Constantly, the Darwin's theory is proved. Why? Through a missing link, through a fossil find. This could be it. It'll be on the front page of the paper, and then honestly, check back in 2 or 3 weeks, page 17D, and there'll be a retraction saying, oh, it was a gibbon bone. Oh, it was a monkey bone. Oh, it was a skull of a monkey with arthritis. They'll put it up way back. Isn't that true? They haven't found the missing link yet. They haven't. Now, if they had, they would put it, they should find a kabillion of them, but they haven't found one. That, to me, is curious. So let's take a look at the evidence for human. Let's just focus on human evolution, because we are told that it's a fact that we evolved from apes. Okay, let's just look at the evidence that we've been taught. You've been taught this. I've been taught this. It's still taught in the textbooks today. Here's what we've been taught. Nebraska man as evidence for evolution. Nebraska man was derived from a single molar tooth found in 1922, meaning literally, listen to me, they found one tooth and they drew this. That's where they got Nebraska man, from a tooth. They found one tooth. They said, this is a missing link. And they drew up, how did they get that? I don't know. In 1928, it was discovered that the tooth belonged to an extinct pig found in Paraguay. Truth, tooth, that's fact. They realized it was just the tooth of a pig. Yet they had told us that it was Nebraska man, part of the evolutionary chain, and is still taught in the schools today. Even though scientists know it's wrong. Grafton Smith, publicist for Nebraska Man, was knighted for his efforts in the fabulous find. Nebraska Man and his wife are shown in this illustration. From one tooth, they not only got Nebraska Man, but they got his wife as well. How'd they do that? From one tooth? I don't know. How about Piltdown Man? You've heard of Piltdown Man, discovered from fragments of a skull cap, and they built Piltdown Man. That's all they had, just some fragments, and they built this whole transitionary, evolutionary man, the Piltdown Man, discovered in 1912. For nearly 40 years, scientists hailed this discovery as key to human evolution, the missing link, Piltdown Man. In 1953, Piltdown Man was revealed to be an elaborate hoax. Teeth had been filed, bones altered, fragments stained. The Great Piltdown Hoax, it was called. How about Neanderthal man, discovered in 1856, good old Neanderthal. Today, most scientists, good scientists, agree that Neanderthal man is a normal human being that probably suffered from vitamin A deficiency, which caused rickets. That's what they honestly believe of Neanderthal man. Those are some of the bones they found to build Neanderthal man. How about Cro-Magnon man? He was modern. Again, scientists today, back then they told us it was part of the link in our human evolution. Today they say that it was a modern man in every respect. Scientists agree that he should not even be listed with him as a missing link. He's just a modern man. Now, Lucy is more something that you're familiar with, something that was found in 1979 by Johansson and White. They said it was a missing link because the knee was slightly bigger than an ape's knee, and its femur had an angle to it. Just as a human femur would have. Those were the two reasons they thought that these bones proved that Lucy was a missing link. Notice, no hands, no leg over here, no knee joint, the matches, and no feet on Lucy. But they claim this is one of the greatest scientific finds as far as the missing links. Let's just examine that for a second. Johansson had gone to Africa, the guy who discovered this, on a grant to find the missing link. He was out to find the missing link. Okay, that was his job, slightly biased to begin with. 2 weeks before his grant money ran out, he found Lucy. It's kind of coincidence? I don't know. This is not really even Lucy's knee. It's the Hadar knee found a year earlier, 70 meters lower and over a mile away. But they stuck it on top of Lucy's knee to prove their point in this diagram showing that her knee joint was bigger and therefore becoming more human. They falsified the information. Said that the femur was angled, proving Lucy was becoming human. But wait a minute, we know that tree-climbing monkeys have angled femurs as well. So why does that prove that Lucy was probably just a primate, climbing monkey, was human? Lucy's knee was slightly bigger, they said, than a regular ape's knee. So that proves she's becoming human. Well, I propose to you that the Clydesdales have slightly bigger knees than a pony. It doesn't mean they're turning into a pickup truck or anything else. Okay? It just means they have bigger knees. But she is hailed. Lucy is hailed as the quintessential missing link. Is she not? In the zoo, where in St. Louis Zoo, where she's on display, remember, she didn't have any feet, she didn't have any hands, but this is what is displayed. Human feet on Lucy. They have no evidence for that whatsoever. They've been challenged on this continually. They refuse to change the display. They didn't find any feet bones, but they put human feet on her because they believe that she's a missing link. They don't have evidence for it, but they're deceiving people, in my opinion. How about Peking Man? He was discovered in the 1920s. Uncovered just as the finances of the discoverer, Davidson Black, were running out. A new grant was given to him when he found these bones for Peking Man. Peking Man was made from pieces of skull found in the 1920s in Peking, China. All evidence was lost in World War II. Most people were never told that the remains of at least 10 humans were also found with these monkey bones, so they could not possibly have been the missing link. There were monkey bones and 10 human skeletons. How about Java Man? Discovered in 1891, about 15 years before his death, the discoverer, Eugene Dubois, finally admitted that he thought the bones were monkey bones, gibbon bones. The discoverer. This is all they had to build him. Java Man was built off of one bone. Not only that, Java Man, which became Homo erectus and dated by evolutionists at 500,000 years old, was made from a few scraps of bone found in 1891. Dutch anatomist Dr. Dubois believed in evolution and had gone to Java to look for the missing link. Again, he was biased out of the chute. I'm looking for a missing link. Dubois took an ape skull cap. He admitted to this. Years later, he admitted he took an ape skull cap knowingly and three human teeth plus a thigh bone found a year later and 50 feet away from a human and informed the world that he had found the missing link. The discoverer admitted this for Java Man. He hid the fact that he had also found two normal human skulls in the same area. His deceit was revealed 30 years later, and you can read that in Bones of Contention. So Java Man was, again, another hoax so that people could get money to continue their studies. Could it be we've been lied to? Do you realize there are not enough fossil records to answer when, where, and how Homo sapiens emerged? Listen, we should have so many fossil bones that you couldn't even imagine. There should not be anything close to a missing link. The fossil record should be full. And Charles Darwin assumed we would find those fossils. Yet we do not. We do not find anything of the sort. Fossil evidence of human evolutionary history is fragmentary and open to various interpretation. Fossil evidence of chimpanzee evolution is absent altogether. Listen, in our textbooks, we're not against science, but we're against bad science. All those people that I just mentioned to you, all those hoaxes, they're still taught today. They're still taught that the evolutionary tree that we evolved from apes, they still use this false information knowingly. That's all we're against. Bad science. Dr. Rainier Prost from Frankfurt University, he had to resign in disgrace, a dating disaster. A panel of professors says the professor of human origins made up his data. This was in 2005, just a couple years ago. He dated a skull of an elderly man who died in 1750. I think they set him up. Died in 1750 knowingly. He dated it to be 27,000 years old. And he did it on purpose. Why? To make money, to keep his job, to make a name for himself. And he had to resign in disgrace. Have we been lied to? The fossils that decorate our family tree are so scarce that there are still more scientists than specimens. Science Digest. This is interesting to me. The remarkable fact that all the physical evidence we have found for human evolution can still be placed with room to spare inside a single coffin. All the physical evidence, let me say it again, all the physical evidence that we have found to date to prove human evolution can all fit inside with room to spare of one single coffin. That's all we have. And most of it are just bits and fragments, a tooth here, a skull cap here. to prove that evolution is true, and you better not open your mouth and Jordan School District and suggest that anything else, because we proved it scientifically. One man seems right until another comes forward. I believe that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. You know, everything makes sense when you start looking at it from that viewpoint. Our conclusion today. Does your philosophy, if you have a different philosophy than Genesis 1 through 11, does your philosophy answer these questions? Who am I? Where did I come from? Why am I here? And where am I going after I die? I'm afraid if you believe in the Darwinian evolution theory, then you can't answer these questions with a clear conscience. You can't. And I suspect that bothers you a little bit. It would bother me. Here's what we believe. God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them. That's what we believe. God is real, and He is big. And He created this universe with a word from His mouth. Amen?
Amen.
Amen. Let's pray. Lord, we thank You so much that You are the Creator. You are the God of gods and the King of kings. And we do believe by faith that You created the heavens and the earth. Lord, and people will come to us and say, no, we have a different theory, yet it's full of holes and it doesn't make sense. And it's not science. It's not provable. It's a religious faith. And they want us to swap our religious faith, their religious faith, for ours. God, and we say no. We believe we have enough evidence to see that You created this earth 6,000 years ago, and about 4,500 years ago, You destroyed it all. God, You created a perfect environment, a garden, a paradise on this earth, yet it was destroyed because of man's sin. Lord, because You created it, You have a right to tell us what is right and wrong, what our purpose is, and that we'll be judged someday. Lord, if there's anyone here right now that's going, you know, I've never heard that before, and man, it makes me wonder, maybe God did create, maybe God is real, maybe that's a viable option. Maybe they don't know You yet. I pray that they would know You tonight. They would say, God, I just want to open my heart to You. If You're real, God, if You are real, if You are the Creator, then speak to my heart somehow. I want to know You. I want to know You. And God, would You be merciful to that person praying that prayer right now? Would You reveal Yourself in a special way? Maybe You've already done that tonight. I trust You have. Through Your creation. Through Your creation. We believe it, God, and we thank You for it. In Jesus' name, amen.